Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interview.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I'm getting no interview. I know.
On 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shirts and the ties for your makeup. Cause I'll make you ugly as soon as it drops. We're on a rampage, bubbles popping up before you know it. There's rubble and dust, cause we'll be pushing it up. Somebody say you better run. Yeah, we think the love's great. Up in here. Straight up. We think the love's great.
Morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday. It's Giving Day. Every year, we here at 92.9, we go all in on supporting Church Health, which is a spectacular organization to help. Really, it's the working poor, the uninsured in this city. And it's an it is truly in the same way that St. Jude is this miraculous place that you can barely even believe exists, taking care of kids with cancer for free. Who does that? You can almost not believe that Church Health exists. Church Health, a place that saw this incredible need. And said, you know what? The faith community should be involved in healing people. That's what, I mean, we talked a lot about Jesus over the weekend with the Olympics, and what did Jesus healed people, so over at Church Health on Giving Day, there's a 1-to-1 match. Every gift matched dollar for dollar up to $250,000. So. If you're given $255,000, that last $5,000 you're on your own. But up to $250,000 is matched dollar for dollar.
To be clear, you can still give that $255,000.
You can still give it, yeah. Go to churchhealth.org, and you'll see. $18 covers protective equipment for each dental appointment. $100 care for a patient with a broken bone. $500, treatment of a patient's diabetes for 6 months. $1,000, operates their clinic lab for a day. This is an organization that one of the wonderful things is that they call on and expect the best of people, and people. It's amazing how people respond. So one of the reasons they're able to do what they do at Church Health is because hundreds and hundreds of doctors give their time. Why did they go be doctors in the first place? Because they want to help. They want to make a contribution. And the folks at Church Health have asked specialists across the city to pitch in, and they give their time. It's really kind of astonishing. And so if you want to contribute, again, you can go to churchhealth.org. Dr. Scott Morris is going to join us in the next segment, and we'll talk to him about Giving Day and about the miraculous place that he founded all those years ago. Also today, Chris Harrington will join us straight up at 10 o'clock. Now, Chris has finally thrown in the towel, Jeffrey. See this? He was waiting and waiting and waiting for the Luke Kennard contract before he wrote his off-season summary analysis at the over at the Daily Memphian. And he finally just said, the hell with it. I'm writing it anyway. Threw in the towel. It's up at the Daily Memphian. And we will talk.
We thank him for his service.
And we will talk to Chris. You can only wait so long, you know? It's like when you're waiting at a I don't know if you're waiting at it. Some lights are broken occasionally. You know, a light was broken or whatever. Or you could be at a railroad track and the gates just remain down.
Yep.
There's no train. There's no train. And you finally just say the hell with it. It's time to go.
Yeah.
Like, I got to go. It's time to go.
You hope you're in the left lane so that you can shoot the gap, if you will.
But so anyway, Chris is going to join. And at 10 o'clock, and then it's Fish on Friday on Tuesday. How about that? Fish on Friday on Tuesday. Fishman sent me. I don't even want to talk about this because for some reason he doesn't think it's serious enough. He sent me video over the weekend of a guy, and this was from social media, a guy eating a Costco hot dog wrapped in a Costco slice of pizza.
Oh, yeah, I saw this video.
He saw the video.
Yeah.
He's totally seen.
Well, why was he this guy getting shamed? This guy should have been hailed as a genius.
I think he was being hailed as a hero.
I saw a lot of people shaming him.
Yeah. He was totally unaware.
Like, this is disgusting.
That guy was a hero. It didn't feel set up to me, did it?
No, it actually...
He was just standing there eating his, like, he was like he does it every day.
Sound like it was... It looked to me like that... It looked to me like that was not the first time.
The first time he had gotten the hot dog, gotten the pizza, wrapped one in the other. Let me ask you, did the person who created Snickers, are they shamed for creating Snickers chocolate? I mean, Reese's chocolate and peanut butter all in one?
No. Indeed, they're... heralded.
They're heralded as the genius that they are. And I think if you can eat a Costco hot dog wrapped in a Costco slice of pizza, more power to you. So, but Charles didn't think that was serious enough, so we're not going to spend a lot of time on that. But that's the lineup today. We got Scott Morris, then we have Chris Harrington, and then we have Fish on Friday on Tuesday. I want to talk about the ranking of all-time great Memphis athletes, not all time, athletes of this century. In a moment. But first, because we are the Olympics authority here on 92.9, I did think we should talk a little bit about the Olympics. And I will ask you this.
All right.
Is Steven Nedorosic, is he the guy we will remember? Is he the hero from this Olympics? Simone Biles may, you know.
Yeah, but we already knew her.
In the same way that I referred just yesterday to the Tongan weightlifter.
Yes, correct.
Remember that Tongan weightlifter?
Correct. We all know him from the electric flag performance.
Are we going to be thinking of our bespectacled hero as the hero of this, the American hero of this Olympics?
I think so. Because I think all of the other like signature great performances, I think are going to come from people that are known.
Is he the Kerry Strug? Kerry Strug.
Who can do it, Kerry?
Who stuck the landing. She stuck the landing.
With all due respect.
She dragged herself out there, gimpy as hell.
With all due respect to Steven.
Stuck the landing.
Kerry won gold.
Oh. Oh. You're going to go there.
I mean, first off, Kerry was playing hurt.
You're going.
In fact, Kerry might have been playing injured.
He always plays hurt. He can't freaking see.
Well, that's his problem.
Well, that is his problem. That was her problem.
No, she could. That was an ankle. That was an injury.
That was an ankle. He can't see.
I thought Kerry had a stress fracture.
I think she had a stress fracture.
Right. He could wear contacts. I'm someone that can't see either.
No, I wear contacts. So I don't know that he can. So Steven Nedorosic is, if you have seen anything of the Olympics, you have seen him, right?
Yes. He is the guy that you sit there and you go, who let the water boy in?
Right.
Correct.
People are obsessed with him, justifiably so. He can't see because he has a visual impairment such that his eyes are permanently dilated.
Okay.
If you've ever gone to the
optometrist yes.
and had your eyes dilated,
yes.
how well do you see after that procedure?
Fine.
Not very well.
Fine. I can't see before dilation.
So he wears his glasses, and he used to compete wearing his glasses. Now, like Clark Kent himself, he takes them off. And he does the pommel, that's his one event, by feel. Doesn't matter. He doesn't need to
see.
He's
a field player. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
He doesn't need to see. And so he's been awesome at the pommel. He was a junior champion at the pommel. But He's just good at the pommel. Mm-hmm. That's like the only specialist. Thing he does.
He's a closer. He's Mariano Rivera. He can't start, but he's got the cutter and you can't hit it.
Or he's Jake Elliott.
Yeah, sure.
He's Steven Goskowski.
I think he's more of a
specialist.
Yeah, well he's Mariano Rivera.
I think that's right.
He throws the cutter.
He had no college offers because people want
all around.
They want people who can help you in a whole bunch of different events. And all he could help you with is the pommel. And so he goes to Penn State, and he basically writes the Penn State coach. He knows that Penn State, you may not know this about Penn State, they're like the breadbasket of pommel. They're okay. Like Penn State used to be known as linebacker U.
Yeah.
Remember that? Jack Ham.
Sure.
And who else from so linebacker U?
LeVar Arrington is more my generation.
Paul Posluszny.
Yeah, Paul Posluszny.
But
LeVar Arrington.
Well, anyway, they're pommel U now. They've had 12 different pommel champions. So the Penn State gives him a scholarship. But then last time around, trying out for the Olympics in the pommel, he fell.
Mm.
He didn't make it, man. Like, so he's not.
Someone overcoming the odds, baby.
He's not always money.
So when he fell, he didn't get in the portal?
And he didn't get into the Olympics either.
Mm-hmm.
And so now he decided, because he was kind of hit or miss. He'd win a championship sometimes, but sometimes he'd fall.
Well, yeah, I mean, sometimes the cutter doesn't cut.
So
I mean, that is kind of the one thing.
If you're a specialist
and you don't nail it.
Well, that's the problem. If you've got one job,
right.
You've got one job.
Exactly.
Right? And so what he said is that he began to focus on, and you know the trick or the as well as anyone, the Russian flop.
Of course. Right? Yes.
So
we call it a LeBron.
He would focus purely on the first task on the pommel. That may not be the right word. And that was the Russian flop. And he just said, I got to get through. And then after you get through the Russian flop, the rest was gravy. But anyway, so the way it worked out yesterday, U.S. going for bronze. Some of you people may know this. If you watched a fragment of the Olympics, you know this. U.S. going for bronze hadn't medaled in men's Olympics since 2008.
Men's gymnastics.
Sorry,
we've had a few men's medals since then.
I'm so enraptured by this story that I'm off my game. You see what happens, Jeffrey? I got one job.
Yep.
And look at how much I'm stumbling around. Mm-hmm. Right. Anyway, and then it did not. It was not predetermined that the pommel would be the last thing they would do. That's purely luck of the draw.
Right.
So whether you do floor exercises first or the vault or the beam, whatever it is. Like
I think China finished on the bars or the ring.
They finished, right. So he's got this one thing to do. And by the way, they go worst to best. So he is now the last person who will perform for the United States. They do everything else first. It could have worked out that Pommel was first, in which case he wouldn't have had to been sitting there waiting and going through his routine. As you pointed out yesterday afternoon, they had a countdown clock on him, waiting for him to do his routine. There he is. Did he look zen to you or worried to you as he was going through the routine? And at one point, he takes off his glasses. He leans back, eyes closed. He's in the moment, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
That's what's happening there.
They call it the present, staying in the present.
And then he gets up on whatever you call it, and he pommeled like no man has pommeled before. He pommeled and pommeled and pommeled. He hit the Russian flop, and after that, it was, in fact, just gravy. By the time he comes off with that one-handed thing that he did at the end, you knew it.
Yeah.
You knew it. Thrust his hand in the air. And then the water boy is carried.
Yeah.
Well, they couldn't really lift him, which is weird because they look very strong.
They all appear and to have small. Intense upper body strength.
They seem to have intense upper body strength. They hoisted him sort of up in the air.
They didn't have great leverage.
He immediately reaches into the bucket and gets his glasses. And then he hoists his glasses
Well, he wanted
in
to be able
air.
To see the moment.
He wanted to be able to see the moment. And it was a great moment. Did you not think it was a great
totally
moment?
Totally agree. It's a guy, like,
compared to those swimmers who are disappointing us right and left.
Well, the other thing, Connor pointed this out, if you watched the whole competition, it came down to, like, if the U.S. was going to medal, like, every single person kind of had to had to hit. And it was like, if they didn't hit, if one person just screwed up a little bit, they were done. And every single guy just kept hitting and hitting and hitting. And then he obviously completely crushed the last routine.
Completely crushed the last routine. He did, evidently didn't have to completely crush it.
But he did.
But he did. And so there they are. And you, the cynic that you are, point out that they only got a bronze, which is true.
Second loser.
And I say the swimmers are
Russia's
disappointing.
Not there either.
I say the swimmers are disappointing. They're getting lots of bronzes and silvers and
We're
stuff.
Getting way too many bronzes
We're
and silvers.
We're getting way too many in the pool. I don't expect that in the pool. But anyway, that was your highlight of yesterday and last night. I, of course, watched the Olympics as God intended on tape delay. And so that was your highlight last night. We have several other events. Things have happened since, though, Jeffrey. Coco Gauff, she's out. She lost this
morning. Yeah.
And she lost this morning. She went out arguing with the up, too.
That was great.
By the time she started arguing, it was over. And so Coco, one flag bearer, is toast. Tonight, we've got, or today, for you.
Wait, I thought Coco and Jess are still in doubles.
Oh, that may be.
Her and Pagula. Pagula is her best friend. And
we got the women's team, gymnastics women's team finale, tonight. So that will be heavily watched, I'm sure. Olympics continue to be. I can't really. There's so different many streaming platforms, so different many different ways they're calculating the TV ratings that it's hard to get a grip on it, except to say that they are large. They are large.
To me, it's like I don't even really care about the number. When you just consider it's now coming up in everyday conversation, to me,
Is it coming up in everyday conversation?
Yeah. People are watching.
I think they are. I think people are
watching. There's also nothing else on.
This idea that isn't it really tragic for these athletes? I saw Riley Gaines tweeted this. She's heartbroken for the athletes because now people aren't going to watch because of the whole Last Supper thing.
Uh-huh.
And if she is, she need not be heartbroken because people are watching in massive volume. Pat McAfee said the similarly stupid thing yesterday. He said, the real problem now is that people aren't going to watch. And it's just the dumbest thing ever. People are absolutely watching. He also said that what we need is we need people who are really involved in sports doing that. And can you imagine athletes and putting together the opening ceremony? It doesn't seem like it's their strength, right? Coaches and athletes, Bill Belichick types, putting together the opening ceremony.
No, that's the last people I want doing entertainment.
not really their strength. So anyway,
I mean, I guess you could make the argument if you had, rather than coaches and athletes, the video people that put the hype tapes together.
I could listen to that argument. I could see that. Yeah.
But if you're talking about, do I want football guys putting together the opening ceremony?
These are parades. Right. These are parades.
They're live events.
So you want people who do that. Anyway, I continue to watch the Olympics. I continue to be moved mostly by our bespectacled hero, Steven, who can do a Rubik's Cube yesterday in 9.321 seconds. Have you ever done a Rubik's Cube?
Have completed it?
Yeah.
No.
No, I haven't. I've never really dedicated myself to the task, but I'm sure it would foil me if I did. But he does it for fun, and so there you go. All right, the other thing I wanted to talk about before we take a break and talk to Scott Morris, who's going to be in studio, is the ranking, Jeffrey, of greatest Memphis athletes of the century at the Daily Memphian. And we have the top 15, okay? The bottom 15 have now been released. You can read this over the Daily Memphian. And I've written little essays about everybody, so you get a flavor of them. Here's your task, Jeffrey.
All right.
You tell me who the top 10 are after I tell you who the bottom 15 are.
All right.
Ricky Stenhouse, Sean McKeel, Calvin Austin, Nana Davis, and Anthony Miller.
Okay.
That was 25 through 21. Steven Guskowski, Brent Rooker, Brady White, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Tony Allen. Now, I got some blowback on Tony Allen. Like, how could he, as someone said, he was this city's spirit animal for a long time. How could he possibly be, you know, not be in the top 5 or 10? And the reason is, as I've said before, we judged on greatest, meaning accomplishments.
How great
were they at the sport, right? Whatever. It's not just what did they mean to the city. That would be a different list. That's not this list. Matt Cain, just to give away, would not be on the what did you mean to the city list, impact list. I'll tell you, I'll give you one of your top 10. He's in the top 10 of greatest Memphis athletes of the century list. So then you got Joe Jackson, Rachel Heck, CDR, Harrison Williams, and Mike Conley.
All right.
That's today. And again, you got two, Rachel Heck and Harrison Williams, two of the best in the world as prep athletes and then Olympic sport athletes.
And Stanford.
And both Stanford, by the way. Harrison Williams still competing in the decathlon and a former U.S. champion in the decathlon, still competing at the Olympics right now. And then you've got Joe Jackson, CDR, and Mike Conley. They were all today. So give me your 10.
Okay.
Who do you think?
So I want to also, you yesterday told me, I'm trying to remember who you said not in there, because I want to include that. All right, so.
I don't know who I said.
You told me, because we were going through the methodology. All right, so.
I said Paxton wasn't in there.
Yeah. Mark Powell.
Mark
Derek.
Powell. Derek.
Matt Cain.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say Gostkowski wasn't there?
We already named Gostkowski.
Okay.
He's already been.
D'Angelo.
So far, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I will tell you, they are all in the top 10.
Okay.
Mark Powell, Derrick Rose, Matt Cain, and D'Angelo.
Zebo.
Uh-huh. Yep, now you're up to 6.
Ja.
Yep, 7. Let me see here, missing. I see. Yeah, these three are... Okay, I'll be honest. One, I don't think should be in the top 10.
Okay.
Still active in his sport today. One should absolutely be in the top 10, I believe. But you don't necessarily think of what this person did in Memphis as a Memphis athlete. And then the other one, I couldn't believe that she still qualified in this century.
So who would have been someone that was like great? Cindy Parlow.
Yep.
Okay. Shout out to my mom. She taught Cindy.
She was the leading scorer in the 2000 Olympics for the U.S.
Yeah.
And she was again in the Olympics in 2004.
Yeah.
So
now Cindy had a really long career.
And then she was retired because of concussions.
Yeah.
But so you got two more. I'm giving it away, but you'll see them unfold over the next 2 days, ladies and gentlemen, the order. I know, again, we have essays about all of the Daily Memphian. Well,
give me sports.
Give me the sports. Okay. One is Memphis football, and one is baseball.
Drew Pomeranz?
No. Austin Riley.
Okay.
Should he not be in there? Yeah.
No, right. Austin should be in there.
Yeah, yeah. And then Memphis football.
I'm biased.
Right.
Ross, Austin and then should be in there.
I mean, he's two-time silver slugger, right? Like, he's... World champion two times. He's,
more importantly, forged by the rights.
And forged by the rights.
Yes, of course.
And then Tony Pollard is the one who I think should be on this list, but I wouldn't necessarily have had him in top 10. It wasn't all my votes. But he's really, I mean, obviously, he made the Pro Bowl. He made the Pro Bowl.
Does that matter anymore?
Well, that's the
problem. Tyler Huntley made the Pro Bowl.
He made the Pro Bowl. He had 2,000-yard seasons and he made the Pro Bowl. Both those things once mattered a lot.
Correct. Now they're.
Right. He's a super athlete.
Correct.
He's a super athlete.
Yeah.
I think he should have been on the top 25. I'm not sure I would have put him in top 10.
Yeah, I mean, it also goes like the value of a running back, but I mean, that's fine.
You'll see the order, whatever. This will unfold over the next 2 days. You can read the pieces that we have up on the 15 who are up, and 10 more to come. All right, Scott Morris is actually in studio, so we'll take a break. We'll talk to Scott when we return. It's Giving Day over at Church Health. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Dr. Scott Morris. It is Giving Day. I don't know how many of these we've done, Scott. I don't know how many of them you all have done over at Church Health. How long has Giving Day been Giving Day?
This is maybe the seventh or eighth year. We haven't done it forever. But
so I remember, I don't know, was it 3 years ago, you were on with me, and then you were on with Gary in the afternoon. And you called after because someone had been driving around, and they heard the conversation, and they called in and whatever, and they gave, I forgot what it was, but it was $50,000 or something like that. It was real. I mean, it was
a big number.
It was a big number. So I'm just saying, if you're out there right now, churchhealth.org, and let them know that you heard from us here.
You can call me directly. I can deal with that.
Call Scott directly. How do people give to, and what is Giving Day? What do you do on Giving Day?
So we have a budget of $27 million, real money that we have to raise. Our budget begins on July 1st. So Giving Day is just a way to focus on, people supporting the work that we do. You know, we provide health care for the people who work to make our lives comfortable. You know, if you're listening here, I guarantee you there's somebody that you personally know that's a patient of Church Health, but you probably didn't know it. You know, it's the person who cuts your grass, who cleans your house, who washes the dishes when you go to a restaurant. You know, those are our patients.
So just for example, you and you're no longer, you're still the founder. You're the person who founded Church Health, but you're no longer the CEO of Church Health. That's a new development. But you still see patients there. You still raise money there. You still are there all the time, right? So take me through just a little bit to give people a sense of what you do and who comes through the door. You were telling me just literally this week about some patients you saw.
So these days, mostly what I do is see patients through our walk-in clinic or urgent care. So the criteria to come to our walk-in clinic is I am sick today and I don't have health insurance. So, you know, your back's been hurting you for 5 years. That's not really sick today. But you come to us for some urgent problem.
By the way, if your back has been hurting you for 5 years, can they still come see you?
You can become an established patient.
Okay, so go ahead, six to eight.
But the cost is $40, mm-hmm. So it's the same no matter what your problem is. You got a cold, you got a broken bone, you're at death's doorstep. Okay. It's obviously a better deal the sicker you are, but for $40, it's a pretty good deal no matter what.
Okay.
So that's what I do. I mean, I see patients through urgent care.
So tell me who's come through the door this week.
I mean, just in the last week, I mean, two people come to mind. Somebody I saw yesterday, who's Latino. I mean, you know, these days almost half of our patients speak Spanish. You know, they're the people doing the work that nobody else is willing to do. But he had fallen 2 weeks ago, hurt his wrist, gets up, keeps working. You know, that's what he does. His arm doesn't get better. He goes to the emergency room a week ago, and it's shattered. They put it in a splint, and then they, you know, give him the number of an orthopedic surgeon. He calls there. It's going to cost
And he doesn't have insurance.
No. It's going to cost $1,000 for the first visit, which he clearly doesn't have. He waits another week, comes to see me yesterday. I x-ray it. I mean, it is a terrible break. So a cast isn't going to fix it. But one of the best orthopedic surgeons in Memphis, you know, saw him yesterday and did the surgery to fix it.
Okay, what's the magic?
Cost him 40 bucks.
What's the magic there? How does one of the best orthopedic surgeons in the city come to see this working man?
Yeah, so every doctor in America goes to medical school primarily because they want to, quote-unquote, help people. Now, along the way, it gets very complicated. You know, the way money factors into our healthcare system is crazily complicated. And it becomes difficult oftentimes for doctors to do what they went to medical school for. And that's what we give them the opportunity to do. See patients, knowing on the front end you're not going to get paid a dime. But for the most part, our patients are incredibly appreciative. They're grateful. And you're helping somebody who has nowhere else to turn. So in the course of almost 40 years now, I've only had one doctor ever just look me in the eye and say, no, I'm not going to do that. But we have 1,000 doctors now who are willing to do that. The best doctors in Memphis, that's who volunteers at Church Health.
How many patients, like this isn't some niche place. How many patients do you or do you tend to have or people do you care for? What are the numbers there?
Well, the way I think about it, there are 80,000 people in Memphis who depend on church health. And that doesn't mean we see them every year or anything, right. But you know, if you ask them where you go to the doctor, they're going to say church health. Now, you know, some people may not only come, but once every 5 years because, right. You know, working people don't go to the doctor for no good reason. If they have a significant problem, though, they're going to turn to us.
This is a big question. Why do these people, like, why do you have to exist? You know, why don't these people have health care otherwise? And what was for them before you invented church health? How many years ago was it now?
Almost 38 now. I mean, Jeff, we don't have enough time to the sports talk show here. But look, the one of the big problems is that Tennessee has failed to expand Medicaid, Obamacare. You know, I'm endlessly hopeful that that might happen, but I'm not holding my breath. You know, people think that Medicaid is health care for the poor.
Right.
It's actually not. In order to get Medicaid or TennCare, as we call it in Tennessee, you must be blind, disabled, over 65, or a single mother with small children. Which means if I take away every penny you have, you never have a chance to earn another cent for the rest of your life, you won't actually qualify for TennCare because you don't meet one of those categorical criteria.
Then folks go to the emergency room.
Yeah, so they go to the emergency room, and emergency rooms are actually for emergencies. And my guy with the broken arm is a good example. I mean, there's not an obligation to actually do that surgery.
There is an obligation. I can't just turn him away at the emergency room. I can't say, we only take rich people to this emergency
room.
That's
right.
I can't say that.
We're going
to see you.
We're going to x-ray you. We're going to tell you your arm is broken, and this is what you need to do, but you're going to have to do it outside of the hospital. That's all the obligation that there is. I mean, look, I'm not saying that they need to have more of an obligation.
Right. You've talked to me about this before. Right now, hospitals and emergency rooms are incredibly overburdened, right?
Our hospitals are struggling mightily despite the best work that you can imagine from our hospital administrators. You know, both Baptist and Methodist are struggling mightily for a lot of very, very complicated reasons. It's not because they're idiots or they're doing stupid stuff.
Right.
It's because of a series of factors that have made it a perfect storm. But I do believe they will come out of this storm.
Is that one reason? So you have all these doctors who open up their hearts and
well, and the hospitals
back to
do too.
That's what I was about to ask. I was going to say, and the hospitals do too, partly because out of it makes sense for them because they don't want all these folks washing up in their ER. It's cost effective, but they also work with you as well, right? What do they do?
Well, they've developed charity pathways that we work with them on almost on a daily basis, so that you know we vet somebody's income and do they have health insurance? Is there going to be a way for them to pay for the surgery? And once we've determined that they're not, then the hospitals are willing to move forward and essentially admit that patient's for free. They're not going to get a bill. It's a small miracle. It's the way it should work in America, and I think we've created a system that actually makes that possible.
It's Church Health. It's Giving Day. Your dollars will be matched dollar for dollar today if you give. Go to churchhealth.org if you are so inclined, and you should be because it is a tremendous – it's funny. One of the things I say – I'm terrible at asking people for money. I'm terrible at whatever else. And your perspective on this is, well, what is your perspective on it?
Look, nobody wakes up and says, what I want to do today is go ask people for money. I mean, that's right, not right, something everybody right. does. But, you know, giving and the whole idea of philanthropy is a reflection of who you are as a human being. Your money and how you spend your money says a whole lot about
your values.
Your values and your heart. And so, you know, my job is to give people the opportunity to give. I truly do believe that's what it is. By asking people to support our work, it allows that person, whoever's listening here, to be able to say, I care about the work they're doing. I care about my neighbor. I want to offer some help. I'm not a physician. I can't volunteer, but I can send Church Health $25, and it will make a difference.
It's amazing to me, with all of this, the $27 million, is that what you said?
That's our budget.
That's every year. You've got to go out and raise that again every year.
That's why we have Giving Day. but it's not just one day. I mean, this is a year-round endeavor.
That's extraordinary. So all these years ago, when you came and started this this endeavor, you've talked about why Memphis, and you literally said it was the poorest place on the map, right? I mean, that's sort of you were one of the interesting things to me is that people talk about people leaving Memphis now. It's one of the great fears. People are leaving, you know, oh, what if everyone leaves Memphis? And I think one of the inspirational parts about your story is that you came to Memphis because of the opportunity to make a difference in Memphis. And it feels sometimes like that's lost a little bit. Like I really do believe it's one of the miracles of this place. There's so much need and so many people who actually do roll up their sleeves and make a difference that running, it's like the firefighters who run to the fire rather than people who run away.
Look, I don't say it just about the fire, but what I do realize is that, you know, if you want to do good in the world and you want to go to Atlanta, you want to go to Nashville, you want to go to New York, nobody's going to give a flip. But if you want to make a difference in Memphis, Memphis will embrace you.
Right.
You know, if you care about Memphis, Memphis will care about you.
Did you have any idea when you started it that you started with how many people?
There were seven that first day.
Seven that first day. And you opened your doors and people wandered in. And now how many do you have over at Churchill?
We have 250 employees. And then, you know, 80,000 people who depend on us. I mean, we see about 300 patients a day. And that goes from not just the physician component of this. We have an amazing dental clinic. We have an eye clinic. We offer counseling. We have a nutrition center. You know, we're the anchor tenant at Crosstown Concourse. We have 150,000 square feet there. I mean,
that's incredible.
We are one of the elements that help develop Crosstown.
I want to ask about that in a minute. Most of your patients work?
Almost all of our patients work. I mean,
do you have to work to be one of your patients, or
have to work, but that is our niche. You know, our niche is for people working in low-wage jobs. But, you know, once you turn 65, if I've been your patient for 20 years, we're not going to kick you out. We're, you know, if you have Medicare, we'll actually take Medicare in that situation. And we see children as well. I mean, that's... You know, we have two pediatricians on our staff now. So growing our pediatric population is an important piece of this. And like where this matters is, you know, if there's a Latino family, they have four children, you know, two born in Mexico, two born in America. Well, the two born in America actually do qualify for TennCare. The two born in Mexico do not. But we take care of the whole family. You know, so we'll see the parents and we'll see all four children.
You can get fairly passionate about the ways that we think about and treat our Latino population, can't you? You had a stat about, it's not leaping to mind.
Well, you know, the average amount of time that somebody who's Latino in the United States is not 2 weeks, not a month, it is 10 years. But one stat that I think ought to open people's mind. Last year, the undocumented population of America paid $15 billion into Social Security, fully understanding from the government side they will never have to
because they have to pay Social Security taxes.
A variety of reasons they pay into it. But without their contributions to Social Security, it would collapse.
You do seem to...
A point of this is that if somebody is building our houses in Germantown and he falls off the roof and breaks his arm, we have an obligation to take care of him. I am certain of that.
Well, all of this, and for you, it's rooted. You have your degree in from Divinity School and your medical degree. And of all of this is rooted. I had a hard time believing this, but I talked to you recently, and you literally said you hit upon this path when you were in high school from reading the Bible. Like, this is all rooted in your belief about what the Bible says and the New Testament says that that we should be doing.
I don't think it's my belief. I think it's what it says.
You're dreaming of pitching for the Atlanta Braves, and you're reading the Bible, and what are you discovering?
Look, the Bible is clear about following Jesus. It doesn't say very much about believing in Jesus, but it says a whole lot about following Jesus. And to do that, you're expected to do three things: to preach, to teach, and to heal. You don't get to take a pass on the healing part. You know, if you want to follow Jesus, you better be involved in a healing ministry, or you're ignoring a third of the gospel. I don't think anybody wants to, at the end of time, look God in the face and have God say to you, "Did you think I was kidding about that part?"
Tell me about another patient who came through the doors this week. Do you have another example? You told me so. The guy with the broken arm.
I have obsessed over this one guy who it's just incredibly sad in that, you know, he's in his late 50s. He's a white guy who is a handyman, does a million things, very subdued in the way he presents himself, but had been having a problem in his neck. It didn't feel right. Just let it go on for a year and a half because he was uninsured and he didn't know what to do and he was afraid and he knew he couldn't pay for it. And so he had a baseball-sized thing in his neck, which is no doubt that it's cancer. The good news is that he paid his $40 and is now seeing the best ear, nose, and throat cancer doctors in Memphis, and they will give him the best care possible. You know, I just wish we hadn't had to wait so long.
And that moment of indecision, like that moment of like knowing you should go to the doctor, but feeling totally hopeless because you don't really have access to a doctor. You don't have insurance, whatever else.
He's not stupid. He knows what it costs.
Right. He knows what it costs. It's churchhealth.org. When you opened up, over on Madison. It was on Peabody.
Peabody.
You opened up on Peabody, and you had one little house, and then you expanded into the houses right next to Bontai over there, right? It was right next to Bontai. But then you moved into Crosstown.
Right.
You didn't just move into Crosstown. You helped make Crosstown possible by the fact that you took this leap of faith. And it was correct me if I'm wrong, a former punter from Ole Miss who was an art professor at the University of Memphis who came to you with an idea about an artist colony or something, and you didn't, like, throw him out on his keister?
That was Todd Richards.
What happened exactly?
Well, on July 8th, 2011, so just over 13 years ago, Todd Richardson, who was an art historian at the University of Memphis.
And a former punter from Ole Miss, right?
Right. The world's expert on the Renaissance painter Peter Bruegel, who I'm sure, Jeff, you know all about.
Love Peter. Love the Strokes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Todd came to talk to me about the idea that he and his artist friends had of turning what was the Sears Distribution Center that had been abandoned since 1992. There are 3,200 windows. Every last one was broken. It was surrounded in barbed wire. It had gotten to be, why would gangs write anything else in the building? What more was there to say? They wanted that to become an artist colony. Uh-huh. Trust me, that was not a financially viable idea. You know, all they wanted of Church Health was for us to be their doctors once they moved in there. But we had grown into 13 buildings, had become very inefficient, and what I said to him in 2011 was, well, what if we move in there with you? So I married one crazy idea with another crazy idea. We join hands, and for the next 3.5 years, we become developers until where we are now. There are 54 entities that have signed long-term leases to be in the building. There are 265 apartments. Every last one is rented, and it's amazing what $300 million can do to an abandoned building.
It's a joyous place, too. When you walk in, it's just a joyous place.
And it's that way every day. And you know, we think of it as a vertical urban village built around health, education, and the arts. And I meet people who still haven't been to Crosstown. And look, if you're listening and you've never been to Crosstown, just come in. And if you don't have your mouth drop open, then come to me and I'll buy you a coffee at French Truck.
French Truck is a fine coffee establishment down there. And you walk in now, it's really kind of amazing because if you, well, there's a YMCA in there and there's
Church Health YMCA. It's 25,000 square feet of church health space we've contracted with the Y to manage.
I see. And so, but then there's this whole dental facility that's extraordinary. And Dan Barron, who used to, he's talked about this openly, which is why I will, but he used to, run this place. He's gone to New Orleans, and but his brother came to y'all. And I don't really think about it this way, but dental care, and particularly poor dental care, is a real barrier to getting anywhere in life. I remember Jerry West used to tell a story about his brother who bought him paid to have his teeth fixed because he didn't think he'd amount to anything if his teeth look all, and that's sort of something that you're dedicated to helping with.
Look, dentistry is an economic issue. You can't go from a minimum wage job to a better job if your teeth are all messed up. It is not going to happen. So fixing people's teeth, it improves their sense of self, it improves their health, and it actually helps them get a better job.
All right. It's churchhealth.org is where you go to give. It's Giving Day. And it is a one-to-one match on Giving Day. So every dollar you give will be matched by another dollar. Now, as I mentioned before, you turned 70, which is why I guess you decided to sort of, you didn't step down. You stepped aside, you stepped sideways, whatever. You're still at church.
I have this new phrase I've learned. Maybe other people know it, but I did not know it. I have rewired.
You've rewired.
Yes, I like that.
How hard is it to... You're no longer the CEO. You dreamed up this place. You created this place. How hard is that to do?
Look, if Church Health was just about me, that would be a terrible thing. So the greatest feeling I could have is knowing that it will go on without me being the CEO. And I am 100% confident that that will happen. Jenny Robbins, who's been our chief financial officer for the last 17 years, is now wearing that title. You know, she and I have worked together literally side by side for all these years. I have all the confidence in the world in her, and she is going to lead us to much greater things.
You have assembled a team of Jennies. Is that not right? Like, for some reason, you've zeroed in on the... You've got a corner on the talented Jennies in this market.
Yeah, our chief operating officer is also named Jenny. And at this point, you know, all the senior leaders at Church Health are women. They're all women. And this incredibly diverse, we have brown, we have black, you know, we have white. I mean, we got it covered.
It's a miraculous, it is truly a miraculous place. And it's a privilege to be able to talk about it every year on this day.
Let me, one last thing. We are about to open our new eye clinic.
Okay.
And the reason why this eye clinic matters, just as dentistry, you know, if you're poor and you're having a heart attack, you go to the emergency room, you will get a bypass operation. If you're poor and you're going blind and you go to the ER, it's not going to happen. You know, it's not seen as an emergency and you will go blind. So we have built a new eye clinic that will open just in a few weeks. We're doing this in partnership with the Hamilton Eye Clinic and University of Tennessee. Methodist and Baptist are involved. This is a crazily complicated thing, but we will address the four leading causes of blindness, which are diabetic retinopathy, macular degeneration, glaucoma, and cataracts. We will be doing 30 vision-saving surgeries a month. And I don't know what could be more biblical than that. You're getting poor people who are blind their vision back.
You talk sometimes about what you think are the keys to life. Three things?
Yes.
What are they?
Joy.
Joy.
Love.
Love.
Being drawn closer to God.
Okay. That third one, what does that mean to you? How does one define that, and how do you think of that?
So it's not just about what you believe. I think the experience of God is driven by how we live our lives. You know, for church for me is what happens at crosstown on a daily basis, and it's not just what happens at Church Health. You know, God is something that is around us at every time, but we have to find a way to pause and open our hearts so that God can speak to us about how life can be so rich. You know, we spend so much time feeling alone, feeling isolated, but those things around joy and love flow into an experience of God because it is greater than we are. You know,
and that's why
it's not just about me.
That the experience of volunteering or the experience of giving, those things, it's not just waking up in the morning and deciding you want to be closer to God. By doing those things, you are
doing.
You find yourself being drawn and more aware of the presence.
That's exactly right. I think people feel, why does God abandon me? Because I'm sitting here praying or thinking about God. I just don't think it works like that. You know, you have to be able to engage the world. You have to care about your neighbor. You have to not just talk the talk. It is ultimately about, are you reaching your hand out for that person who has nowhere else to turn were it not for you? I mean, you are literally the hands and feet of God in these situations, and I think that's what God calls us to do.
Scott, thanks very much. Churchhealth.org today on Giving Day. Every dollar that you give to Church Health will be matched 1-for-1. Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it. We got Chris Harrington coming up next. Before then, I will tell you that if you have you got a big yard, you got a piece of land you're taking care of, maybe you got a massive garden, maybe you like to do a little bit of bush hogging. Driving a tractor is fun. Let's be honest. Shopping for a tractor is fun. And at Mid-South Ag, they're right on Highway 302 in Byhalia. They've got the tractors for you. Case IH tractors, they're not like these tractors that you need to take care of 300 acres of soy in Arkansas, but they're exactly what you need for your big garden, for your big plot of land that you're mowing, for bush hogging, whatever. It's the Case IH tractor, 140 horsepower, or less, precisely what you need. Forget green, go big red with a smaller Case IH tractor from Mid-South Ag Equipment, in stock right now, 0% financing on Highway 302 in Byhalia. When we return, Chris Harrington will join us, and then Fish on Friday on Tuesday. Busy Tuesday on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Harrington
now. It's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies, Memphis, and more. Presented by the Majestic Grill. Rediscover downtown dining. Chris Harrington on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is The Harder They Come, the title track from the great reggae movie / soundtrack album of the early 70s. By Jimmy Cliff. Jimmy Cliff, 80 years old today.
All right. You finally decided. You said on Twitter, tired of waiting. You've thrown in the towel, and you published your off-season summary. You just couldn't hold out any longer.
Yeah, I mean, I've been tired of waiting, but this was more of an issue of, I'm leaving town Friday for more than 2 weeks, and I wanted to get that published and then write a big mid-summer mailbag thing that, you know, that basically can go up while I'm gone. And so I was running out of time.
By the way, a little point of business here. Are you on with us Friday or no?
Yes.
Friday, yes, but after that, you'll take a little bit of a break. Okay, so I've tweeted out the piece again. I tweeted out yesterday, but if people want to read it for themselves after we finish our conversation, you can find it on Twitter or over at the Daily Memphian. We've talked about some of it, Chris, but I wanted to further explore some of the points you make. The first point you make in this is that the Grizzlies really did, in a very real way, decide to run back last year's team. As you point out, 12 of 15 roster players are here, and they obviously liked what they thought they were going to have last year, and they never saw it. What your thoughts on this idea that they ran it back?
Yeah, the one thing they couldn't run back relative to what they thought they were going to have last season is Steven Adams. And so that's where Zach Edey comes in. And that seems, of everything that was realistically available to them, that seems like a pretty good bet on, like, replacing the Steven Adams role, the healthy Steven Adams role. But other than that, like, they thought the team they were going to have last season was going to be good, and so did everyone else. And that was even with Josh set to miss 25 games and Brandon Clark set to miss the season. Remember that this is before right. We knew Steven Adams wouldn't play. And so, you know, this is the same core, and I think the core of this team is three players, Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson. It's the same core, the same sort of six-man finisher, Brandon Clark, and the same head coach, Taylor Jenkins, of a team that finished second in the West each of the two previous seasons before this detour last year. So in between that, they went out and they added Marcus Smart because they thought he would be a great sort of defender and sort of veteran, proven playoff veteran player. They added Luke Kennard because they thought, you know, his shooting would help boost the core they had. And then they developed in this mishmash of young players, some have popped up. You know, Vince Williams, I think, most notably, but, you know, Gigi Jackson and some others. And so there was real reason to think that this is a team that fell apart in a temporary sense, probably, maybe. There's reason to think that. And so it's not like what they put together last season was proven to not be good enough. It never got the chance. And so there's reason for them to still believe in what they believed in a year ago.
Yeah, and there's, and as you point out, they've never seen it. We've never really seen that core with Marcus Smart as and Luke Kennard as two of the key reserves or two of the key elements added because we don't know whether right. Smart going to be a reserve or not. And it's interesting. You get the sense that some of the fan base might be psychologically ready to move on from Marcus Smart. Like, that didn't work. Well, it did not work. Like, they
played 20 games.
Yeah. They seem to want to see what they thought they were going to see last year, I guess, right? They obviously still believe in it. Or believe in the...
I think the small stretch they had where they had Marcus Smart playing with the three core guys, and this is like, you know, half a dozen games or whatever, like it looked good. It looked good in that stretch. Nothing is guaranteed, but nothing that happened last season disproves the idea that Marcus Smart would be a great, you know, complement to that core. And Marcus Smart has miles on him, and he's had some injury problems. He's only 30 years old. And so, yeah, to me, it's totally rational to look at that and say, if we believe this worked a year ago, there's nothing that's happened since then that would tell us it doesn't.
So, and then moving forward, there's really two, as you point out, we'll get to this coaching staff in a minute, but there's two reasonably significant changes. One is Zach Edey for Steven Adams, and you have to say, at this time last year, we were envisioning... I think, anyway, a healthy Steven Adams, right?
Well, and I was envisioning an available Steven Adams.
Okay.
I did not envision Steven Adams playing 30 minutes a night for 75 games or whatever.
Right.
I thought there would be limitations to him, and the team thought there would be limitations to him, but they thought he would be available, you know? It would be a diminished, but available.
Even with those caveats, you'd have to feel better about that Steven Adams, even as high as you are on Zach Edey, as compared to a totally unproven. I mean, I think they've did a totally credible job of replacing that Steven Adams. But just if you were weighing one versus the other, putting aside that we knew what actually happened was he never played at all, you would take that limited Steven Adams off of this unproven Zach Edey?
No? I think it's a lot closer call to that because I think I can only speak for myself, but like you can go back and find things I wrote and things I said. This is not hindsight.
Right.
At the time, I was striking notes of caution about how much to expect from Steven Adams. The team believed he was going to be available opening night. He played the first preseason game, but I was writing and talking about how like don't expect too much out of this, given the injury he's coming off of, that there are going to be limitations in how much he plays and how well. And with Zach Edey, yes, he's a rookie, and we only saw like really the one summer league game, and so there's a lot of unknown there. But I think that's at least a toss-up.
Okay. And then, as you also point out in the column, Vince, Gigi, and Laravia, what we know about Laravia, at least have learned a little bit, Compared to last year, same time, what we knew about Zaire, Roddy, and LaRavia, dramatically better, right?
Yeah, dramatically better. I mean, I think in large part because of what we saw the step forward that Vince Williams Jr. took.
Right.
But in terms of amid all of the unproductiveness of that last year, there was productive sorting among this morass of young players. All, you know, they had all these young players in a bucket, the classic Lionel Hollins, Chris Wallace bucket. And over the course of a mostly lost year, there was productive sorting that happened. And Vince Williams and Gigi Jackson sorted their way up, and David Roddy and Zaire Williams sorted their way out, and LaRavia modestly improved his standing.
Okay. So onto the coaching staff, because there was changes in the coaching staff. Kept Taylor Jenkins, so in that sense, they're running it back. But you sort of made a point that they kept the two new assistants, and then they continued along this path of swapping out assistants. What do you make of what they did with the bench?
Yeah, I think to me this is sort of it's a small distinction maybe, but I think it's a key one. They did not look at their coaching staff and say, our coaching staff is a mess, let's blow it up. They looked at it and said, we identified some areas we wanted to get better a year ago. Let's push even more into those same two areas. And so a year ago, they added two new assistants. They added Patrick St. Andrews, and they added Anthony Carter. And Andrews had a reputation as sort of an offensive tactician, and Carter had a reputation as a player development guy. The season was such, I mean, they finished last in offense, but the season was such a mess with availability. To me, you just can't judge it from a coaching standpoint. They did have some success stories on the player development side. But what they did this season was not, like, scrap the changes they'd made a year ago. They kept the changes they made a year ago and scrapped the rest of it. And the people they brought in were more on the same two areas. They brought in this guy, Noah LaRoche, to run their player development program, and they brought in this shiny new lead assistant who's got a reputation as an offensive tactician. And so I think the fact that they changed their coaching staff more than their roster says, A, they believed in their roster, that sort of guy, they're giving it a mulligan from last season. And B, it says they believe they can make the roster better with better coaching development around them.
So
to me, the coaching changes to me are a double down on the roster continuity.
So there's been a lot of speculation about what the coaching changes mean, and then people have looked at the backgrounds of these guys, LaRoche and Salo, is that it?
Yeah.
And said, oh, look at this. They play all this five-out, three-pointers, layups, whatever. As you've said before, like, they're not going to stop, you know, running pick and rolls, you know, with John Morant. So, but it is interesting because the quote that you highlighted from Taylor Jenkins was, we're trying to play a collective brand of basketball, interchangeable, positionless, guys that can create and maintain advantages for us. What does that quote signal to you?
So, well, the reason I italicize that is that language is language that's associated with this new league assistant. And we didn't know at the time, but maybe if we had done some spelunking and, like, Googled some of these phrases, like, the Salo guy's name would have popped up. And to me, I don't know how much it changes things substantively, but this is, like, the new lingo. Last year, the lingo was Gears, right? This is the new lingo, and that lingo ended up being a preview of coming attractions of their coaching staff changes in retrospect. And so, you know, to me, I mean, I sort of goofed on the positionless quote, actually the day he said it when I wrote the Zach Edey column. Like, yes, I think Taylor Jenkins is a thing Zach Edey, who is very much not positionless, you know. He's very locked into a position.
Right.
You know, I think, you know, I don't want to make too much of it. We'll see what happens on the floor. But the idea that the general philosophy that Taylor Jenkins has offensively hasn't really come to fruition, but I don't think the general philosophy changes of wanting to the emphasis is on pressuring the rim and getting to the paint, and then secondarily, like, creating 3-point shots off of that rim pressure. They always have known they need to be better in the half court, you know, that they've been better in transition in the half court. Like, how you get there with the talent you have, that's the trick, but I don't think it's going to look radically different. I think it's going to look, you know, there's small tweaks and different personnel, and you hope, you know, you get it to where it needs to go. But I don't think it's going to be like they're changing the, you know, the very, you know, nature of basketball when they roll the ball out there.
All right, and then the third thing you write about, again, people can read the piece at the Daily Memphian, is that the Grizzlies care more about the tax than they're sort of letting on. And we've talked about this a little bit last week, so I don't want to go too deeply into it. But there were two things that you wrote here that I was curious about. This sentence: did the team choose ducking the tax over improving the back end of its roster? Yes. What would that have looked like?
They could have gone out. I mean, they have access to free agency exceptions they're just probably not going to use. They could have gone out. Now, they've waited for the market to basically disappear. Like, that was a choice, too. And so it's not like today you can go out and sign various players. But, like, 2 or 3 weeks ago, or even now, like, you know, Precious Achiuwa is sitting out there. And they'd be a pretty good fifth big on this team, you know, better than anybody they have. They could go throw an offer at him today and go into the tax. There have been other players, and I don't have the list off the top of my head, but like there are other players who have signed that they could have made a bid for in free agency. And instead of having, you know, John Conchar, Derrick Rose, Jake LaRavia, Mamadou Diakate as the, and then an empty roster spot or whatever,
right.
Like they could have had better players in those spots going into the season, more proven players.
Okay. And then the second thing in this section, the team has not actually said yet, because we haven't asked them about it, I guess, whatever. They have not said that they're trying to not start the clock on the repeater tax, right? Like, that's one of the you have harsher penalties the more times you are a taxpayer, 3 out of 4 seasons, I think it is, right? But you said if they bring that up, you think it's a bit of a bogeyman, not a real threat. Why not? Like, presumably they will be paying the tax at some point in the future. Why start the clock now if you don't have to? Why is that more a...
Well, I'm not saying you should start the clock now if you don't have to, but I don't think the Grizzlies are ever going to be a repeater tax team. So, I think they're not going to pay the tax,
right?
You know, 3 out of 4 or whatever it is, years. I also think the cap's going to start going up a lot more. It only went up 4% this year. It's going to start going up 10%. I just don't see it as that big of a thing. I think it's more of a specter in the distance than a more direct thing. But again, I think they have essentially chosen so far, the tax is calculated at the end of the season, not in the beginning.
Right.
They have essentially chosen to avoid the tax, you know, by not doing things at the bottom of the roster. I think they did what they really essentially wanted to do with the rotation. And so to me, they have dodged the question, and the question sort of, you know, pushes out into the future, but they, to me, have sort of successfully dodged the question at the moment.
And all this, of course, was written with the Luke Kennard contract still to come.
My presumption, right. More than an expectation. My presumption is he will be back on a relatively short-term deal that will keep them under the tax line, at least at the moment it is signed.
Yes, not my expectation, but presumption. You wrote, and so wait, less than 3 years, and significantly less than the 14.8 that he would have made, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if it hits 10. You know, on a per year basis.
He is playing in the FedEx St. Jude Championship golf tournament, the thing that they have out at Spring Creek, and so who knows if it'll be done by then, but you are imagining it will be done. The other thing, of course, that's changed is the West has changed, right? Like, we've had new teams emerge, we've had Oklahoma City emerge, we've had sort of Denver look more vulnerable, thinner than ever, I guess. You've had the fading of the Lakers, the fading of Golden State, or presumed, who knows, they've shuffled the lineup. The riser of the Timberwolves, it is sort of like taking last year's team into last year is going to be different than taking essentially last year's team into this year, right? I mean, the West has changed.
Well, sure, but I don't know if it's changed. To me, it's scrambled a little bit, but it's settled in a similar kind of place. I don't want to, you know, get too far ahead of stuff that I'll write 2 months from now, but because, you know, we're not playing basketball for a long time, so we got to stretch it out. But I have taken a look. I sort of mapped out the conference actually this week for a column I'll probably write at some point, you know, later in the summer or early fall. I'm pretty sure I'm going to have the Grizzlies as the top five team in the West. You know, where in that top five, I don't know. But I feel pretty good, barring unexpected stuff, that I'm going to have them as sort of a top five team. And that's sort of around where I had them a year ago, you know?
Yeah. All right, Chris. Oh, wait. Santi, another nice effort. Spain defeats Greece. Although he did get posterized, but played well, continued to play well. And so I guess that's good. Better than the alternative.
Yeah, it's good for him. I don't think it has much bearing either way on, like, you know, his NBA future going forward. But, yeah.
All right, Chris. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
You can read the piece over in the Daily Memphian. I have tweeted it out. It is sort of striking, isn't it, Jeffrey? Literally, if you think about it, all they did was take Steven Adams, make him disappear, and add Zach Edey. Really? That's it.
Yeah,
really.
and then kind of get rid of Zaire.
Yeah, whatever. Some people have emerged. Some people have whatever because of Gigi and Vince.
I feel like they cleaned out like their T-shirt drawer. Like they didn't clean out the whole.
No, absolutely not.
Like not the whole.
Yeah, that's different socks.
Yeah,
right. You know, but your sport coat, your whatever, it's all the same. Yeah. Your slacks you're wearing, whatever it is.
You didn't buy new suits.
You just got a new handkerchief.
Yeah.
And so then if there's two things you did, Zach Edey, this unknown Zach Edey versus that recovering, he was even this year recovering Steven Adams, call that a draw?
Yeah, but it's a draw to me with the potential of being an upgrade.
Absolutely potential of being an upgrade. Absolutely potential. He could be awesome. It could also be a downgrade. There's uncertainty baked into either. We know, here's the thing. We know with Steve Adams, the uncertainty turned into calamity, right? We don't know what the uncertainty with Zach Edey will turn into. It could turn into triumph. And so there is definitely a higher ceiling to Steven Adams. And then if you go to the other thing that swapped out, you've got this version of Vince, this version of Gigi, and even this version, this improved version of Jake LaRavia over the wish that was Zaire,
yep,
right?
Roddy.
And Roddy. People really, Vince was there, but he wasn't really being thought of particularly as a, so dramatically better. It's a better team.
Yeah. I mean, and I honestly, though, I'm pretty comfortable with the thought that Edey is going to be an upgrade over Adams. Because I think in the end,
he certainly is going to be an upgrade over Adams.
Like,
Adams didn't even play. Is he going to be an Adam? Is he going to be an upgrade over Adams at his zenith?
I think it absolutely can be for
can
two.
Be.
I mean, I think I would bet on it.
You'd bet on it.
Because to me, the number one main thing is, A, you can't just hack an Edey. He's going to make probably close to 80% of his free throws. And then I don't think he's a nothing burger on offense. And so
he's clearly not a nothing burger on offense.
And to me, like, that's a huge part of why teams were able to pack the paint and kind of dare the Grizzlies to shoot.
I hold out great hope. Wouldn't that be awesome? Like, if he's actually a force.
Professionally and
if he's a force, there's going to be Edey mania. We are, just brace yourself, people. If that dude is what we hope he can be, this station, we're going to, it's ESPN 92.9 FM Edey, whatever, all the time.
Streaming live on the
Edey be mania. All right, we got Fish on Friday on Tuesday coming up next. Before that, I will tell you, if you're selling your home, Josh Hysa would be the person to call. Josh will make an instant cash offer at full market value for your home. And what a relief that would be. You don't have to, like, worry about what you have to do, worry about how you have to fix it up, worry about the open houses, worry about keeping the house clean. No. Call Josh. He will come over, do a walkthrough, and make an instant cash offer for your home. I'm not just telling you that. I know people who've done it. Most recently, Candace lived in Cordova. She did exactly that. House was sold, closed, everything else within 2 weeks. It's Josh Hysa. You can call him today at 901-461-8147 or go to the website. That's joshhasthebuyers.com. Catchy. joshhasthebuyers.com. 901-461-8147. 24/7. Back in a moment. Fish on Friday on Tuesday. When we return, Jeff Cawkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. I was talking to the folks at Leaders Credit Union the other day, and it's funny. So I'm like, oh, it's a credit union. Well, a credit union is a place that exists for the benefit of its members as opposed to for the benefit of the bank, right? But then, like, well, I like the convenience of a big bank. Leaders Credit Union, you have access to more fee-free ATMs than the Bank of America. 85,000. Access to 85,000 fee-free ATMs over at Leaders. Just another reason that Claire and I have opened an account at Leaders Credit Union. Again, they exist like every good credit union does, and they're among the best for the benefit of their members. They've got a branch in Bartlett, and they're open another in Arlington, and more fee-free ATMs than the Bank of America, 85,000 of them. To learn more, go to leaderscu.com/ESPN. Joined now by Charles Fisherman, our man in Washington, D.C. You know it. He is the author of 3 New York Times bestsellers, most recently One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to take us to the moon. Also a 3-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for Excellence in Business Writing, and a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand, joins me now. Charles, how are you?
I'm good. I want to say just one thing. Given how much time you've already devoted to the pizza wrapped hot dog, I think it really, you gave it, you aired it out completely. But here's why I would oppose the idea of a pizza wrapped hot dog.
This is because someone at Costco, the video is going around.
Do you want me to cut his mic?
They cut his mic. They had the Costco hot dog wrapped in a Costco pizza, and we were celebrating it. And you oppose
3.4
it?
3.4 million views, I think. That's, it's got now.
It was totally, it was not staged, was it? Do you think it was staged?
That one was not staged, but there are a dozen TikTok videos about this. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
As you know, I love hot dogs. I am one of the super fans of a good hot dog. And I love pizza. And I wouldn't waste the pizza or the hot dog.
No, you know what it's like? You know what it's like, Charles? It's like 69, the position. You know, it's very much like 69. Wildly overrated. You'd think it's a good idea in concept, but it's really like the pizza wrapped hot dog. Isn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to leave that. I'm going to leave that right there with you.
Thank you.
I went and donated $100 to Church Health while you were talking about it.
Probably.
I usually give on Giving Day.
Uh-huh.
I feel this real sense of connection and even obligation to Memphis. I'm an ex officio.
Well, and it's the money that you get from this. The money that you get
from
this rate.
A little back.
Yeah.
I would guess that with this year's $100 Church Health donation, what do you think? I'm about $100 in the hole.
So far this year, that would put you $100 in the hole.
I want people to know that I have tried to set up whatever that thing is where you could donate to people for their good work, for their good journalism and the good writing, and you have blocked me from doing that.
You were going to do it on Twitter, or you were going to do it like a Patreon account, or what were you going to do?
I was going to set up a Patreon.
Patreon for people who appreciate Charles.
Segment, give $3 a month to defray the cost.
Once again,
which is half a day. Literally, you're taking 10% of my work hours to do this.
I'm going to tell our advertising team again that there's a great opportunity here. Or for anyone listening right now, if you want to sponsor Fish on Friday on Tuesday, our most listened to segment.
Department of the University of Memphis. I'm an advocate for engineers.
And we'll make sure Charles gets a cut so he can buy his own hot dog wrapped pizza. What else, Charles?
Anyway, Church Health has become part of the landscape and the infrastructure in Memphis. One of the things I love about it is the dental clinic, because as Scott Morris said this morning, if there's something wrong with your teeth, you can't go. The emergency room is like, okay, we're sorry about that, but are you having a heart attack? You know, do you have a broken wrist?
Right.
But dental problems, first of all, they can be very serious health issues. They can devastate your health. But also, just think about it. Your whole body, a single tooth hurting can just destroy your ability to function. And
yes.
So I so appreciate the dental clinic, the expansion of the eye clinic. Anyway, if you've got $10, if you've got $20, Church Health doesn't It's part of the infrastructure, but they make it up every year.
It's incredible. Yeah.
So that's
Olympics. Do you have some? Have you been watching any Olympics, Charles?
I love the Olympics. I love the Olympics, and I had an important revelation,
okay.
An important insight, which is that. And I want you to just remain calm.
Okay, fine. I'll shut up. Go ahead.
I think the Olympics are in some ways just like presidential politics in an election. I find it hard. I know that most of Americans, not 50%, maybe 70%, literally just don't pay attention. They're busy living their lives. By the way, I'm busy living my life, too. I have kids. I have a wife. I have a house. I have dogs. But I kind of am steeped in the news all the time.
Yeah.
And so I don't really grasp what it means to not pay attention at all to presidential politics. But the Olympics is the perfect example. I watched dressage on Sunday. I probably watched for half an hour.
I don't think it was dressage. I think you watched eventing. Isn't that where they were going over jumps?
They called it dressage.
Oh, did they?
Yes, it was a huge course that took 9 minutes on a horse running 20 miles an hour.
Yeah.
It was many miles.
What'd you think?
And 3 miles. And you're jumping over hedges. You're jumping over bridges. You're going through the water.
Yeah.
When was the last time I watched a horse event like that? Maybe the last Olympics, but maybe not. Maybe the Olympics before that. And it was just hypnotic. Well, I don't pay any attention to dressage or breaststroke or women's gymnastics anytime except during the Olympics. And then I know people's names and I pay attention. I mean, the dressage. Here's the thing about dressage. You know where dressage was held? Do you know where the venue is?
In Versailles.
The Palace of Versailles.
My niece, Charlotte, was there.
She was there.
She's a horse rider herself. She was not competing. She was in the gallery.
Versailles, at one point, during the height of the French aristocracy, Versailles was home to 2,200 horses.
Wow.
Imagine if I had to take care of 20 horses. I have trouble with two dogs. 2,200 horses. It's 2008. The grounds of Versailles, three times the size of Central Park in New York. So a great place. Anyway, and that's exactly what presidential politics is like.
Pops up every 4 years. Yeah, we don't pay any attention and it pops up.
At the moment that they need to, which, let's be honest, isn't even July of election year. It's October of election year. Because I wasn't paying attention to the Olympics 4 weeks ago. Let me get ready for dressage. I turn it on. And, you know, one of the things that I guess the broadcasters, you know, are just part of the scene, but they do a beautiful job of very gently, you know, welcoming you in. They don't tell the dressage story or the 100, you know, meter medley story as if you're an idiot. And they don't tell it as if everybody's an insider. They really welcome you. And so I just love, that's what I love about the Olympics. And I the athleticism is incredible. My wife couldn't watch dressage. She watched for like 3 minutes and she said, I have my heart in my throat every time.
It's excruciating, heading over the horse. Okay, yes. Anything else you want to say about the Olympics?
I wanted to talk about the air conditioning. Have you talked about air conditioning?
We haven't mentioned air conditioning, no.
Yeah. The Paris Olympics decided that the village that houses 10,500 athletes...
The athletes' village, yep.
...should have no air conditioning.
Crazy.
They use geothermal cooling, which can work. Each room was given one fan. Do you know what the temperature right now in real time in Paris is right this minute? Any idea?
I'll say 92.
You're very close. It's 93. Even I, legendary.
That's hot. That is hot. Jeffrey, can we confirm? It's a dry heat. Jeffrey says it's a dry heat.
It's not a dry heat. That's the problem. So the seven biggest teams, including the U.S. and China, have brought their own room air conditioners and installed them. A slice of athletes aren't staying. They're staying in hotels.
No, the rich ones. So there's no way an NBA player would stay in the athletes' village.
Coco
ever,
Graf,
ever, ever.
Coco Gauff is staying in the village.
She's staying in the village. There's no way Simone Biles is staying in the village.
Simone Biles is in the village.
No,
Simone Biles is in the village, and she said that the beds were terrible, but somebody lent her a mattress topper. She feels better. So the top seven teams, the seven largest teams,
brought their own ACs,
have supplied their own air conditioners or rented them. You know what team has air conditioners? Yeah, the French. The French have air conditioners.
Of course they do. I'm surprised. I'm not surprised that we didn't bring this up. I'm surprised you aren't. I mean, you're the water expert. You've got a book on water, The Big Thirst. I'm surprised you haven't talked to us about Poop River there. They tried to clean up the Seine. And a Memphian Memphian is competing, Seth Ryder, in the triathlon. And
which was postponed.
Postponed it again. They're confident it can go off Wednesday, really are in the wee hours this morning.
I have many thoughts. Let's do them quickly. First of all, Jeffrey has been to Paris more than I have. I disagree with his observation that it doesn't seem dirty. When you're walking along the Seine, it doesn't seem like a beautiful, clean river. It seems like...
You got to remember, my experience is the Mississippi River, which looks like just mud.
Mississippi seems like mud. It's fast moving. It's a muddy river.
I got a creek in my backyard. I'd swim in that creek, but I would not swim in the river. And your friend, the athlete, who's trying to develop...
It's not my friend, Seth Ryder.
Mm-hmm. Seth Ryder to E. coli by exposing himself to
it. That's right. It's genius.
Yeah. You know how you get exposed to E. coli? There's about a trillion E. coli in your body right now. You're carrying them around. You can't inoculate yourself.
Hey, Charles, let me ask you this. Which one of you is at the Olympics? You or Seth Ryder? I'm going to believe him. Which one of you has an experience?
As a practicing immunologist. Anyway, you can't inoculate yourself against it.
Do you realize that if it can't go off Wednesday, they're thinking of making it not a triathlon, but a duathlon? That seems awful.
Are you serious?
Yes, that was in one of the AP stories. Their confidence is going to go off. They have no backup plan. There's no plan. The plan is the Seine. That's the plan.
This was a good goal. Bad plan. It may surprise listeners and you, Jeff Calkins, to learn I have toured the sewers of Paris.
Oh.
I've been in the actual sewers.
Didn't know that.
And I would have aspired to this, but not relied.
You have a backup plan. We don't have much time, Charles. I want to go to McDonald's. We're going to go right to McDonald's.
McDonald's had a very tough 3 months. They reported their quarterly results yesterday morning. We're going to go through this quickly. Their sales fell for the first time in years. Same store sales, and their visits fell. So
what's the problem?
People pulled back from McDonald's. Well, you know what the problem is. People are husbanding their.
Yeah, but I would think McDonald's would be. McDonald's isn't actually one of the places that strikes me as crazy expensive.
Well, here's what's interesting. McDonald's blamed the American consumer.
Oh,
blamed the quote unquote state of the economy. The quarter ended, and just the last 5 days of the quarter had the new $5 value meal.
Yeah.
So they said that's working very well, especially improving the number of people who come to the store. And they said, really interesting, for people who buy a $5 value meal, the average check is over $10, which is an interesting kind of data point. So people come in, they buy a $5 value meal, maybe what they really do is buy two. Right. But they spend much more than $5. But Chipotle just reported sales, and its same-store sales are up 11%. Chipotle says American consumer, just fine. Procter & Gamble reported this morning.
Mm-hmm.
That's
what do they
Tide,
make?
Okay, Pampers, shampoo. They make the new all-body deodorant that women are supposed to need. They make everything.
Just women,
beauty.
Not men? Men don't need all-body deodorant?
There's both.
We've had Axe. Okay. I don't know about you, but I've been using all-body deodorant to keep all my smells in check. You don't need all-body deodorant, ladies and gentlemen. Don't use it. They said specifically, we don't see any signs of nervousness or weakness in the consumer. They did say we sell essentials. You know, you can give up McDonald's. You can't
give up Tide. Right, exactly.
But, doesn't McDonald's own Chipotle?
No, sir. Chipotle
is its own place.
McDonald's had a huge investment in Chipotle long, long, long ago. Chipotle is famously a publicly traded stock. It was the shares were just trading at $3,200 per share. One share cost $3,200, and they did a 50-to-1 stock split just in the last 2 weeks. So now a share is $60. No, they are an independent, publicly traded company. So P&G and Chipotle would say, yeah, maybe it's something about McDonald's. Anyway, I want to get to the story of the week.
Go ahead.
I've circled this
for a long time, and I never got to it. So I'm glad you're bringing it up.
I appreciate that you're taking credit for my story.
Not taking credit, just alerting you to how great minds think alike. Yeah.
On Thursday, the Ohio Supreme Court faced a difficult case, which seems goofy. Can boneless chicken wings have bones? And when I see boneless chicken...
From a guy who injured himself...
2016.
Biting into a boneless chicken wing.
In a local wing shop in Ohio. Seriously injured. Two surgeries. Hospitalized. You can just feel a bone caught in your throat. Here is what the majority at the Ohio Supreme Court...
Jeffrey, what would you say? Should boneless chicken wings have bones?
No.
I would say no. It seems right there in the name.
No breach of duty... No breach of responsibility, because the consumer could have reasonably expected and guarded against the presence of an injurious substance in the food. What consumer? What consumer could have reasonably expected that there would be no injurious substance in the food? Here we go. A diner reading boneless wings on a menu would no more believe that the restaurant was warranting the absence of bones then believe that the items were made from chicken wings, just as a person eating chicken fingers would know that he had not been served fingers.
This is stupid. That is a horrible decision. That is a travesty.
The food items label is a cooking style, not a guarantee.
Are we going to start getting the warning on boneless chicken wings that we get with McDonald's coffee?
Make a day. Well, a fish fillet. If you're an adult, somebody serves you fish, and it's fresh fish, it's not processed, you eat carefully, right? Because you might find a bone. Here is what
is true that you do, so you get chicken fingers, you know they're not actual fingers. That's just a label.
That's a completely different... Here's what the dissenters wrote.
Yeah.
Does anyone really believe that the parents in this country who feed their young children boneless wings or chicken tenders or chicken nuggets or chicken fingers expect bones in the chicken? Of course they don't. When they read the word boneless, they think it means without bones. So it sounds like a goofy story.
No, it's a crazy... Boneless should be boneless.
Right. It doesn't matter. To say that something's a chicken finger is a description of the thing that's being presented. To say that something's boneless, the point of describing it as boneless is that you can take a bite of it.
And you honestly, the fish you wouldn't see say if a fish if you were served a piece of fish, it wouldn't say boneless because they would say they realize there's going to be some bones in there.
They often say to you at a restaurant, be careful, there might be some bones. We filleted it, but be careful. And if you buy a filleted piece of fish in the at the deli counter or the seafood counter, I'm always careful.
Whereas the expectation with a nugget or a finger or whatever else, there's no bones.
Let's be honest, it's been processed to such a degree that it doesn't have a bone in it. It's a little bit, maybe this isn't the right comparison, it's a little bit like saying these olives have no pits in them, these are pitted olives, and then you bite into it and break a tooth. Well, I don't think that's a description. I think that's a warranty. So anyway, the Ohio Supreme Court
has gone to hell, man.
Badly wrong.
All right, thanks, Charles. Appreciate it. On Twitter at C Fishman.
Apple earnings and Amazon earnings.
Every sports talk show listen. That interest rate decision. Our sports talk listeners are going to be locked into that one. Thank you, Charles. On Twitter, at C Fishman. Hey, best place to bet the games this summer is FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, new customers, $150 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. You got Simone Biles and the U.S. women today. Going for the team gold. If your $5 bet wins, you get $150 in bonus bets. Go crazy. Bet on whatever you like at the summer games. Don't miss your chance over at FanDuel. Go to FanDuel.com/Calkins. That's CALKINS. Must be 21 or older, present Tennessee. First online real money wager, only $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions do apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Jeffrey, what is coming up next?
Here's what's coming up next.
Jeffrey, what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jessica Benson will join the program. Tim Murray joins us on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jeff will join Gabe at 5 o'clock. Remember, it's Giving Day, churchhealth.org.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Back tomorrow. For now, our work is done.